I want to start with a very simple question. I presume that everyone in this room owns a blech. The question is, why in the world do we have a blech? The world seems to get on very well without one. So why do we have one? For what purpose? That's where I want to start. And the reality is that the blech serves two separate functions, coming from two totally different standpoints. Let us make note of the following. We're not here principally at the moment to address the question of Bishul B'Shabbos. Maybe at the end of tonight's share, Bishul will make an appearance, a guest appearance. But that's not what we're here for. Chazal long ago stated that Akol Tolib Mazal Lachud Sefer Torah Shabbeichel. Now we're on Kodesh, and there's 50 Sefer Torah in it. One they read in every week, one they read every Monday and Thursday, one they read Rosh Chodesh. 30 of them, they have to remember to take them out, you know, to dust them off a couple of times a year. They're all Sefer Torah. People say B'Torah Shebehechol is Toli B'Mazel. Halachas also Toli B'Mazel. There are halachas which, in the overall scheme of things, are very, very minor things, and the whole world knows about them. And the Ikrei Dinim, which are Chomer Ma'oid, and nobody knows about them. In Ovos Melochus and Shabbos, there are 39 Ovos Melochus. There are some Ovos Melochus that are well known. You would probably say that every from Jew knows there's a notion of carrying on Shabbos, the way it's all. He knows he can't strike a match on Shabbos. He knows he can't cook on Shabbos. Those things he knows. Does he know that there's such a Melochus Boyer? Lav bedavka. Does he understand? Notice a malach of teichin. Lav bedavka. In kohen and many malachos, some that are known and some that are not known. What's interesting is that Bishol is a very well-known malach. Everyone knows he can't cook on Shabbos. Now, why is that? That's because of all the fuss that takes place around cooking on Shabbos. And all the dinner rabbanon that you do, one inevitably realizes that this is a restricted area. Tread lightly. Doesn't mean people know all the finer points, but the general concept that you have to cook before Shabbos, anyone that calls themselves from, and many that don't, know that. Chazal instituted two significant gzeiros. One which was not even, neither one which is a derais of the gzeiros. One which, according to the view that we paskin like, has something to do with Bishul. And one has nothing to do with Bishul at all. They discussed in the very beginning of the third parak of Masechta Shabbos. Now we have two gzeiros which are referred to in technical terms as Shehiyah and Chazar. Shehiyah means allowing something to wait or to stay, and Chazar means to return something. So Chazal said there are issues with leaving food on the fire as Shabbos begins. And then there are also issues with returning pots to the fire which were on the fire when Shabbos did begin. And I took them off for some reason and I want to return them. That also, those have issues. Now, let's talk about the way we Ashkenazim pass. Svartim have a different slant, a more chomerdik slant. Because after you read the few blot in Parakira, which have to do with the Xeris, and there's a machlekes of Hananya and the Rabbonon, which is the Ikal Halacha, not clearly articulated. So the Rishonim have pages and pages and pages. It's a long sugya. They have a lot of rayas. Up and back and up and back and up and back and up and back. So the Rambam and the Rif Paskin, like the one the Yom and the We Ashkenazim, don't conduct ourselves like We Ashkenazim. Conduct ourselves like the other Tana. Why do we Paskin like that? That's less than clear. In a certain regard, the Rosh sort of indicates he's really not 100% sure what the halacha is, but the minhag emerged in certain ways. So it's a very clouded subject. And consequently, the psak split between the Svardim and the Ashkenazim, which Tana and the Mishnah we're going to follow. We're going to talk about right now about Ashkenazi practice. So according to Ashkenazi practice, once food starts to cook, it may not be left on the fire unless preferably it's half cooked and with the oven at least one third cooked by the time Shabbos begins. Now, what's the reason for this? The reason for this is very simple. You come on Friday night and you want to eat. Now, lo and behold, the food's not ready to eat. It's not cooked yet. This is not a very comfortable situation. So one may impulsively react to that situation by stoking the fire, that open, that solid fuel fire, by stoking the flames, take a poker, stoke the flames, add more oxygen to the mix, and raise the heat so that the food will get done in some reasonable amount of time. This is the concern that Chazal had, that a person might impulsively react to the situation in that fashion. So the way we paskin, that once it's, as I said, preferably half-cooked or a third-cooked, it's edible as a cooked food. It's no longer raw. It may be on the rear side, whatever it is, but it's a cooked food, or it doesn't taste raw anymore. And consequently, Hananya, the Tana that we Ashkenazim follow, says that a person is not going to react or overreact to that situation, because if you're hungry, just sit down and eat. Listen, not every night of your life is the food the best. When you're very hungry, be on the road for a few days and you finally come to some low-grade kosher restaurant, but clearly kosher, and you can buy yourself a sandwich. You don't kvetch how good it is, how good it isn't. I haven't eaten half decently in 3 days, whatever it is it'll do. So that's the approach that Hananya takes. Now, the term that we use for the food being edible as a cooked food is Michael, the food of Ben Drusoy. Now, Ben Drusoy, as I've mentioned to you other times, Ben Drusoy was a thief. And in contemporary terms, he was always on the lam. And the sheriff's posse was chasing after him. So, what was the most dangerous time of the day for him? The most dangerous time of the day is when he wanted to cook his food. Because then there's a plume of smoke that rises, and someone might see the plume in the middle of the, coming up from the middle of the forest, or wherever else in the mountain, wherever he was hiding. And they would identify where he was, and close in on him. So Ben Drusoy's practice was to cook his food as quickly and as minimally as he could to make it edible. And then apparently either he ate and he disappeared, or he disappeared with the food and ate elsewhere. Which one, I don't know. But either way, he made sure that he didn't hang out in such a place, known location, too long. And he disappeared again. Now, I've mentioned it other times. I don't think his name was Drusoy. I've told this to you before. His name remains unknown. X. But just as we have in Baba Basra, Hani Nichse de Barshatya, who was Eitim Choli, Eitim Bori, Barshatya was a schizophrenic. He had a psychotic episode in his rational episodes in life. And he sold a piece of land, and then there was a dispute exactly what was the psychological state when he sold it. Was he psychotic, and therefore he was not responsible for the deal? Or was he, in fact, in a rational, clear-headed state, and the deal is binding? And this, they came to Besdin to slug it out. I do not believe his name was Shatya, or Bar Shatya. Bar Shatya means the Shaita. So I don't think his name, Chazal, duly shielded his name from history, and left him, he's unknown in history. But the case of Bar Shatya, of the Shaita, and I think Michael Ben Rousseau was Doras V'Ochel, is like a person that an animal rips upon its food. It's Doras V'Ochel. Ben Rousseau, he tore into his food. So it was referred to as Ben Rousseau, but that was not actually his name. Al Kaponim, that's the notion of cooking something to Michael Ben Rousseau. So this is step number one that the Ashkenazim take. Now, if the food is between zero, and as I said, the Chatchila half cooked, then since we're afraid that a person may be feel impelled to rush the cooking once Shabbos began, so we disallowed a person from leaving food on the fire in such a state, in between zero and a half, or the other a third. So what did Chazal do? You know, life is not always lived perfectly, and it would be very nice to articulate, listen, all the food ought to be cooked before Shabbos begins. Yeah, that is very nice. But today, there was an accident on the highway, and I was stuck behind it for an hour and a half getting home, and I walked into the house 15 minutes before Shabbos. I left 2 hours before Shabbos, but I got home 15 minutes before Shabbos. One of the things that I do every Friday in the winter is take calls in the last half an hour before Shabbos, what to do. People are stuck all over the place. They're going to get home. They're not going to get home. The interesting thing is, I would say about 90% of them actually make it home in time. Only about 10% have to actually park and get stuck or walk or whatever. So, Chazal instituted what we can do if the food is in between zero and a half. And they made, as the Mishnah tells us, two types of takonos. Two fixes for this problem. Now, this is a very important point before we proceed into actually what Chazal did. I decided I have a 21st century fix to this problem. You know, well, why take a fix that's 2,000 years old from the time of the Mishnah from Rabbeinu HaKadosh? I have a contemporary fix for the problem. And I guarantee you, no one will ever forget that it's Shabbos. And Mark will make it computer driven, so you'll scan in the licht pensions for the whole year, and it'll come on exactly before Shabbos, whatever, it'll do its thing. You know, every Friday night of the year, midnight, whatever, it'll go off again. And that's it, it'll be very simple. What I'm going to take is one of those balls they use, you know, with the psychedelic colors, and we'll hook it up to the electric. It's going to start spinning right when Shabbos begins. And you'll have all the strobe lights and all the colors flashing around the kitchen. You'll walk any place on the first floor of your house. You'll know, hey, this is Shabbos now. Stay away from the stove. So why get involved? Listen, I want a 21st century edition, you know, of the heck. Why do I need a blech? I don't want a blech anymore. Blech, listen, my grandfather used it. My great-grandfather. Listen, the 21st century, of new possibility. We do things differently. Yeah, we have to kaim the halacha, but, you know. So what's the problem? Now, we can't do that. Even though all the Rishonim agree that the notion of the blech is a hecker, what exactly the hecker is there's a debate. And some say it's just a pure hecker, and some say technically it has a certain dinim to it. But nevertheless, we can only use the fix that Chazal gave us. We cannot create our own fixes. So as cute as they may be and as effective as they may be, it's not relevant. The Kiyam of the Halacha demands that we use the fixes that Chazal created. Now, they were using solid fuel. So when you use a solid fuel oven, you put in wood, you put in coal. So usually, the way these ovens are made, you have an area where you can, on one side of the oven, which is a grate, and if you want to empty the oven out, you can sweep all the coals, and they fall down out of the oven into a, like a stone box on the bottom, and then they burn themselves out. You know. So, Chazal told us there were two ways, two fixes, which are acceptable. One is what's called gorov. The simplest pshat on gorov, but not the only pshat, meant to sweep the coals out of the oven. But a hearth oven retains its heat for a long time. It's designed in such fashion that the heated area extends above the opening, so it traps a great deal of heat inside, and it takes a mighty long time. Once it's hot, until it cools down, really cools down, is a mighty long time. So you bank the flames by sweeping the coals out. The Ran, interestingly, as a pshat, just means to sweep them to the side, not in the place that you normally keep them, to push them away from the normal place. So either way, you come to the oven and you realize, listen, something's different here than it was until now. This is not when I cook Sheishas Yom Tava, this is not the way we do it. That's Gorov. Kotum means Kitmus ash. That they took the ash, when you have a solid fuel oven, you have plenty of ash, take the ash and they spread ash over the coals. So again, the coals didn't go out so quickly, the oven didn't cool, but you're starting to bank the heat in the oven. Those are the two takhonas that Chazal made. Now, Oblech is not in the realm of Gorof, obviously. We don't change anything about where the flame is. Oblech has to make it on the merits of Kotum. So, what exactly was the hecker of Kotum? So, according to Tosis, it was just a hecker. You come, and I don't normally cook with coals that are covered in ash. So when you got near the stove Friday night and you gave one look, it brought you back very quickly to reality. This is Shabbos now, and just take a step back and just leave it alone. That's the way Tosis looked at it. Now from that standpoint, Oblech functions the same way. We cover the fire. We never cook with the fire covered a whole week. So therefore, that's Kotum. It meets the Xerist Kotum, the Takon of Kotum. Now Rashi, interestingly, has an interesting shot, and as much as Tosis asks on it, but the Shulchan Aruch actually incorporated Rashi's view in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish on Gimel, which is a very surprising thing that that happened. Rashi said the issue of Kotum is not only that you cover the coals, but thereby you cool the coals down by lessening the amount of oxygen that is going to enter into the equation. And therefore, Rashi's point is that since you proactively did something to cool it down, you're not going to be inclined later to come and say, hey, I'm coming to warm it up. I did an action of cooling it down, so when I confront later the fact that the coals are not as hot as I want, well, I just made them cooler and cooler because it's Shabbos. So that's the hecker that's going to stop me from going forward. So the question is, Oblech would not seem to do that, right? It does not make ultimately much of a qualitative difference in the heat. It conducts the heat quite well. Now, interestingly, because of this, and it just shows you, as I said, you know, things need to be updated. And there's nothing wrong. We're not against updates, you know, as long as they fit the parameters of the halacha, but we need updates. The Chazon Ish Zecher Tzadik Livracha died this month. I think Yudalat Cheshvan, if I recall correctly, 60 years ago. So the Chazon Ish said that the blechs don't meet the requirement of the Shulchan Aruch of Kotum. So the Chazon Ish said that the only blechs that he was willing to sign off on in Eretz Yisrael were asbestos. And I remember when I came to Eretz Yisrael in the late 60s, yeah, they had asbestos things that they put down over the fire, and the asbestos, in fact, cooled it off. They did not let the heat go through in the fullest sense. And I yet remember as a child that my mother had an asbestos pan, the same way we use certain trivets. They had, you know, under the bean pot, they used to put it, you know, and every house had one. Go know that they're going to tell us, you know, 50 years later that, you know, we put our lives in danger with this. So as I say, the world changes. The Chazon Ish was not in favor. There are other materials that will do the same thing today, that will have a significant heat differential between what's underneath and what's on top. You know, designed, in fact, to accomplish that, you know.
There's something called the tamer we used to use. It's not quite a trivet, but it's thick and it has holes inside and the air passes through. So
they use that for cooking, not to burn things.
Right, so
yeah.
Essentially...
You can't put essentially be a pipe of blech, because it really, the top is cooler, significantly cooler than what we'd have underneath, perhaps. So this was the Chazon Ish's view. But that doesn't help us here in America. In America of 60 years ago, 70 years ago, in America of today, we still have blechs, which conduct the heat quite well. There's a very interesting tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, where Rav Moshe defends our blechs. According to Tosis, they're fine. According to Rashi, and the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin like Rashi. So Rav Moshe, ever the Mechadish, you know, it's a mind that sees like every facet of what the Gemara is doing, and understands every exactly where it fits and why it is that way. So he asked a very simple question. He says, how come the Gemara talked about the fact you're going to come to stoke the coals? Why didn't the Gemara talk about the fact that you're going to take and throw extra wood into the fire, extra coal into the fire? Why did not do that? So in effect, the assumption is, it's really based on something that Tosfos says in Be'ah of Gimel Amud Aleph. Tosfos says that where we're likely to get in trouble, and we need a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, in effect, we have a concern that we need something to keep us out of trouble. That's if something's very easy to do. It doesn't need extensive preparation to do it. But let's say, are we going to be choshish something that you have to bring a ladder, and you have to put on special clothes, and bring 17 tools out, you know, and 6 extension wires before you set up to begin the work? We don't make zeros about such things. Because by the time, by the time you get finished setting it all up, you'll say, hey, wait a second, as sleepy as I am, it's still Shabbos today, you know, what am I doing? By that time. The question is something which doesn't need a big setup time, where I can just, you know, Tosfos says, does it need tools, etc., where I can go right at it with limited preparation. That's where we're concerned that I'm going to overstep the bounds. So Rav Moshe said, when it came to stoking the coal, we'll come back to this, because it's a very interesting point that I want to explore. That a person can do impulsively, you don't need any big hachonas for it. But you're going to take wood and go over and throw it into the fire. Before you do that on Shabbos, you're going to remember that it's Shabbos. It's not what you're supposed to be doing. Akaponim Chazal were not geyser against adding fuel to the fire. Now, in general, we may articulate the following. This is a very important klal in halacha altogether. Undoubtedly, if Chazal would convene today, Chachmei Ashas, and look at all the things that go on in our world, so undoubtedly, two things would take place. There's some of the Xavers that would decide, you know, that they don't need anymore, and they would update them and get rid of them. And they would say there are certain new problems that we have, and we ought to implement some new Xavers for them, so that we don't come to violate Shabbos and other halachas based on the contemporary technologies that we have. But, this is a very important but. The halacha is not here to predict or articulate what we think Chazal would update. The halacha is according to what's in the Shas and the Shohrach. That's the halacha. What they made a gzeira on is a gzeira, and even if we think the reason doesn't apply, it still applies. And even if we think they would make a new gzeira, but they didn't, so it remains mutal halacha. That's the general perspective of the halacha. So Rav Moshe Zatzal says, Chazal were concerned in their technology that we would stoke the flames. They were not concerned that we would add fuel to the fire. He says, in our situation, we can't stoke the flames, and our contemporary gas ranges are electric flames. Not relevant, because we're not using solid fuels. Elo, we can very readily and easily add fuel by changing the setting of the knob. So it's a maisakal. So, yitochen, that if Chazal were present today and they convened, they would have made zeros against that too. But Chazal didn't make such a zera. So Mamela says there's no such concern. That was his perspective. And he defended our blechs, in effect saying that according to Rashi, it could well be that we don't even need a blech altogether. There's a possibility. Now, what I found very interesting and fascinating in all of this is, where is the principal gzera of the blech? What does it have to do? So Rav Moshe wrote in his tshuvas that the principal gzera is the esh. Now we have a strange thing in our technology, because the esh and the controls of the esh are in two different places. When you have a solid fuel fire, a fireplace, it's all one and the same. You put a stoke, a poker in, and you move around the flames. So the flame and the control, everything is in the same place. But now that we have a handle at the edge of the stove, and we have a flame in the middle of the stove. So which is the ikar? So Rav Moshe Zatzal wrote that the ikar is the flame. The handle, it's a nice idea if you cover. If you don't cover it, oh, good, you know. It's good to cover it, take it off, whatever, but do something about it. Right? Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal was very makpid, and he could be even held that the ikar was, in fact, the handles. But he certainly was very makpid about the handles. So I discovered in reading the Beis Yosef once that this dichotomy between the Eish and the controls for the Eish existed really in their technology too. Why? Because the way that it worked was very interesting. I didn't grow up in a fireplace, and we don't use usually a fireplace in our contemporary society just for ambience, not really for heat. But the way they used to do is you'd sit around the fire, and everyone had his own poker coming to your seat. So if you started to feel cool, you just stirred a little bit with your poker. And the flame near you, that part, flared up a little bit and you got warm. So in effect, you really had the same thing. In other words, the control was where you sat and the flame was in the fireplace. So you actually did have this dichotomy almost in the classical, you know, fireplace setting too. That the fire was in one place, and where you controlled it, you didn't go to the fire, you sat in your seat and you had a poker, and from there you were able to mishtach what you wanted, you know, without getting too close to the fire. So there you see, in fact, it's in a certain regard that the gzeiros and the Shulchan Aruch were not on the pokers. The gzeiros were on the eish itself. So that tends a little bit to support, you know.
That wasn't really for cooking.
What?
So that wasn't for cooking.
It could have been used for cooking too. You could have the same thing, you know. If you wanted the fire to get high and you want to get up, you could do the same thing. It was the same fireplace, usually.
You probably did use a poker for you. You weren't going to get your
hands
on the
fire. No, I'm not saying cooking. In other words, the community setting. Everybody sat by a fire.
Yeah, but they had, in other words, this is, you know. I'll call upon them, it's interesting that there was a parallel Matzias that existed, you know, and their technology took.
Why do we have a blech at all if that's considered adding fuel to the fire, not considered stoking, assuming that we don't know, like, what's his own inch?
Well, Ramesh is assuming like this. What he's saying is a chiddush, and he's defending Rashi as one view in the Rishonim. So he's defending that we're yotzi Rashi shita too. Now, he could readily argue the other side of it and say, really, the din is that even that this is also part of the gzera, that you'll add fuel. Elamai, but we're yotzi according to Tosis, because it's a real hecker. It's a kind of the din of the Gemara. So that's in effect what he did. In effect, what he's saying is sort of mamonoshach. You know, Tosis, but the interesting thing is that the Shulchan Aruch bothers to bring Rashi all together, because in most of the Rishonim, I do not believe from what I saw, most of the Rishonim did not line up with Rashi. Most of the Rishonim line up against Rashi at this point. So Moshe might have taken it either as fake at the dinner or as a chumrah. And we yitzi that sheet, and the Shulchan Aruch wants us to be yitzi that sheet too. But Yitochen, it seemed to me that most Rishonim, in fact, were on Tosfos side at this point. So you have to be, the Shulchan Aruch wrote it, you have to be yitzi somewhere the Shulchan Aruch too. But in the larger scheme of things, we don't need the, we could do without the chiddush and say that the adding fuel is included, and we yaitz according to most Rishonim with the blech that we have as we have it. That's what seems. That's the way I would take the tree. So principally, as I said, for this function, what we call Shia, leaving pots on the fire of Shabbos begins, the way we Ashkenazim pasken is the problem is only once the food started to cook and it's half and less than half cooked, or less than a third cooked. The Sfaradim have a different take, based on the way the Rambam and the Rif and the Tana that they pasken like in the Gemara. According to the Sfaradim Shashita, even if something is fully cooked, we'll come back to what the term fully cooked means. Let's leave that on the side. I don't know if we're going to get there today or a different day. As long as being on the fire improves the taste, cholent probably tastes better Shabbos morning than it does 11 o'clock Friday night. So, now, it's cooked already Friday night. So everything is cooked. But the process, it's a lot of flavor to it. So from the Sfaradim Paskin, that as long as the heat is having a positive effect, so then I'm concerned that I may come, in fact, to raise the heat because I want to intensify the positive effect that it's going to have. And we're still going. And we Ashkenazim follow the view of Hananya and the Gemara that the only real concern is not for the best food, but for edible food. As long as it's edible, then we're not going to get out of hand. Now, so the truth of the matter is, most of the time today, in terms of Shehiyah, Mitzarat Din, we don't really need a blech. We need it for other reasons, because of Chazor, but for Shehiyah, most of the time, we don't need a blech. Because by and large, the food is cooked before Shabbos begins. But we do have to be ready for all types of eventualities. As I said, sometimes due to the vicissitudes of travel, we wind up getting very late to where we have to go. Or we don't even get where we have to go altogether. I wind up in a motel room someplace. The last place I wanted to be with, that's where I am. Snowbound, traffic bound, whatever the reasons may be. So we do have to know what the bottom line halachas are. And then you also have things that you can never predict. You know, before I lived in Kew Garden Hills, I didn't live too far from here. I lived about 2 miles away in Kew Gardens for 8 years. And in those wintry days when Shkia is around 4:30 in the afternoon, so 4:20 in the afternoon, there's a knock on my door. Now, nowadays, you know, Hashem, we have, you know, grown children and grandchildren or whatever, so we don't prepare with tzimtzum, you know, for Shabbos. If another person or two comes, they'll have what to eat, you know. When you have a couple of little kids, you know, how much do you prepare, you know, yourself, your wife, a job for the kids? You don't have a lot, you know. So 4:20, 10 minutes before Shkia, there's a knock on the door. This is rather surprising. We're not anticipating having anyone come to Shabbos. Open up the door, and lo and behold, one of my relatives is standing at the door. One person. They were traveling back from London on Erev Shabbos. Things were delayed. So they raced off the plane. Now, one thing about this part of town is it's pretty close to the airport. So they came straight from the airport, from Kennedy, straight to my house. And 10 minutes before Shkia, they knocked on the door. So the Rebbetzin ran, and she could have got another piece of chicken or whatever it is and threw it into the pot, you know. So now it's no way, it's not going to be half cooked with Shabbos stones. That also happens in life. So both you have to know what to do if it happens. And the truth is, having been set up, the blech was already set up, was you didn't have to start to take everything off and start again from scratch. It was easy enough to do. The blech was on, just throw the chicken and close the pot up, and that's it. So these things do happen, and we have to be prepared for them. In the era,
she was able to do that because in those 10 minutes it was going to get cooked.
No, it wouldn't get no. There was a blech.
With the blech, you can actually cook on.
You could let it cook, yeah. So we weren't going to use it for another hour, 2 hours, whatever. But then, by the time we'd sit down to eat, it would be cooked already. But you know, but we didn't anticipate. Now, we have to know the halacha for all types of situations. Among the great Goyim of Galicia was the Chabino Rov, Dober Shvinfeld, Tzadik the Rov. He survived the war, I think in Siberia, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he and the Chazanish were considered the two greatest poskim in Eretz Yisrael. And he outlived the Chazanish by about 12 years or so, 12, 13 years. These were considered, these were the two greatest poskim in Eretz Yisrael. So he said he always told, he founded a yeshiva called the Chabina Yeshiva, Koichal Miyako, which is like at the end of Ezra's Torah, the beginning of Shikun Lubavitch in Yerushalayim, if you know the area. And he told his Talmid in the following, that when you learn the Shulchan Aruch, he says, learn everything, don't skip. You learn things that are strange, that, like what in the world do I need to know this for? It's not relevant to my life. Learn it anyhow. This is why he says, I did not anticipate that I'm ever going to live in Siberia. It was not, never crossed my mind. I did not anticipate that I would ever live with the limitations that the circumstances imposed upon me in Siberia. So there were many, many situations which came up, which I was only able to deal with because basically I'd studied everything. So I'm amazed for the totally unanticipated situations which arose, I was prepared to deal with them too. So this is life, learn everything. You don't know when it's going to be relevant, and then you won't necessarily be able to ask a shayla when it becomes relevant. You'll have to know what to do. So we need to know. You know, sometimes we have to restate the obvious. What's the simplest blech that you can make? A little aluminum foil. You don't have anything else, and it could be some aluminum foil and put it down. Okay, you set the flame a little lower to make sure the flame doesn't hit the silver foil, and you have a blech. So if you're going someplace with Shabbos and you get stuck, so just cover up the grate with a piece of silver foil, and you have a blech. So it's an obvious thing, but how often do we not realize the obvious? So this is one reason that we have the, yeah.
Let me just in the case, if you went somewhere for Shabbos and your food was cooked,
yeah,
and either you didn't figure out that silver foil trick or for whatever reason you didn't do it, so theoretically, according to us,
yes,
you wouldn't have a problem anyway.
You would not have a problem if you're an Ashkenazi, correct?
Well, I've usually heard that by cholent that it needs to be somewhat cooked before Shabbos. Is that only because you don't have a blockage on it?
If it's, you don't have it, you'd have to be half cooked. Not somewhat cooked.
But with the blech, it wouldn't need to be.
With the blech, it's not a problem. Now, it's also, in all of this, as I say, you know, there are situations which are theoretically true, but they're not the things that we want to do. Because in life, we don't want to be in a situation where we have to be at the top of our game constantly to get it right. We want to set ourselves up in a fashion that even if I'm not at the top of my game, it's still going to work. And I mean to say the following. So we said, hypothetically, the food, I have a blech, the food could be partially cooked, very partially cooked, when Shabbos begins. But Rav Henkins, that's all. It's now just over 40 years since Rav Henkin was Nifta. So Rav Henkin Zatzal wrote in one of his Sforim that we should endeavor to complete the cooking of all the food before Shabbos begins. Why? He said. Because there are, you know, some things we have to try to do, and some things that are very easy. We don't even need any effort. So this Chilul Shabbos is the easy way. Mamash the easy way. Effortless, you know. I tell them. Want to be Mechallel Shabbos the easy way, effortlessly. Come home from Shul Friday night. And you know, you weren't in the kitchen. You want to know what your mother made for Shabbos. So go into the kitchen, and you pick up the pot covers, look inside each one, smell it a drop, close it up, and go around. And you'll see everything that your mother made for Shabbos. Now, if the food was not fully cooked before you opened up this pot, and now you close the pot again, you're over bishul deraisa. Because anything which I do which intensifies the heat, which will cause the food now to cook faster, is a violation of bishul. Now, it's not relevant what it would have done when the pot was closed. I opened the pot now. So now I'm in the situation that the pot is open. And now when I put the pot cover back, I'm closing the pot again. So if your mother hasn't finished cooking, so then you can't open and close the pot. And the rare circumstances that it happens in my house, whatever, somebody comes late or something, whatever it may be. So, you know, I tell everybody, listen, this pot, it's staying where it is. It's not being touched till Shabbos morning. Don't open it, don't move it, don't close it, don't do anything. Just leave it alone, you know. So Rav Henkin Zatzal wrote, for that reason, since the contemporary practice is we don't like to leave on too many. The Balabustas don't like to leave on too many flames for Shabbos. You know, and if you have a blech that conducts heat well, you could probably get away with one flame. You know, we have a copper blech, and it conducts heat very, very well. So basically, what happens is that the food for Friday night is closest to the flame, and the food either for later in the meal, or if you're going to leave it overnight, and the blech is further away. And as the Friday night food gets, you know, pushed off, so everything gets moved into a tighter circle around the flame. So Rav Henkin Zatzal wrote, since that's our practice to move things closer to the flame on Shabbos, so if we're going to have something on the blech which is not fully cooked, so then we're going to be cooked. So that's why Rav Henkin Zatzal advised that we not put food on the fire unless it's fully cooked. Now, see, we're talking about Shehiyah. We haven't yet talked about Chazar. Now, when Shehiyah assumes that the flame could be adjusted, let's say you have a device where it has only, let's say, an electronic device particularly, it's true of, where it has just an on and an off. It doesn't have varied heat settings. A coffee maker has an on, most of them, unless you have a really fancy one. But most of them just have an on. You can put it on, you can put it off, and that's it. So, can I put that up right before Shabbos? There's no gzeira of raising the flame, because you can't raise the flame if you want to. No way to do it. So, what's the din? So, Pashtus Hadvarim is that it's mutter. Such a case, there's no din shehiyah in such a case if the flame has one setting. So what ought to follow from that is that if I have an electric coffee maker, an urn, and I want to put up the water, and I forgot to do it, it's right before Shabbos, so I can fill it up and plug it in, because it's not violating shehiyah, because she is assuming that this I have to adjust the heat. I can't adjust the heat. Now,
the Chazal weren't masakim for such a...
What?
They didn't have that kind of a technology.
So they said the gzeira is Shema Yechata. There's no gzeira of Shema Yechata. Whether they had it or they didn't. The Metzia says, they said, that's the gzeira Shema Yechata. There's no gzeira Shema Yechata. Stand on your head. Be Mechata. So So the Poskim agree that something which is not, cannot be adjusted, is mutter. So the Chayrut should be mutter. So Ramesh Zatzal objected. He said, Lo zu aderech. Why? Because if you take out a cup of water before it's fully cooked, you're going to violate Bishul. So again, this is something that we have to be careful not to do.
Take out
water, it's
burn.
Yeah, sure. So then the rest of the water is going to cook more quickly.
Oh,
the lesser the volume of water, right, the faster it's going to cook. Good. If you get stuck with the oven, you probably should put a cup or something over the handle and write, you know, do not, you know, take water until, you know, who knows, 7 o'clock. So to make some type of hacker that we should be sure that we're not going to do it. But, you know, here's a case, again. Theoretically, it's fine, but the theoretics don't always play out well in the real world. The real world has its things which drive it.
If one violates Bishul, does that cause a problem with eating the food?
If one violated Bishul, yeah, it makes a problem. We'll come to that when we talk about Bishul. I'm not going to talk about it today. If one violates Shehiyah, there's also problems in using the food. But first I want to do with Shehiyah, Chazorah, and I'll talk about the general rules of Bishul and what to do with the Eved if we violated them.
The blech doesn't help in terms of moving the...
No, the blech does not, as I said, the blech does not resolve issues of Bishul. It resolves two rabbinical issues. One is that I shouldn't come to adjust the flame, and then we'll see what the issues involving Chazorah, returning things to the fire on Shabbos. But the blech is of absolutely no avail in terms of the deraisa. That a halacha does not make an absolute determination in terms of what Michael ben Nusoy is, if it's a half or it's a third. Therefore, that's why we find that because we have these two views, b'shas atchak, we're dealing here with an isa derabbanan, it's a gzera. So b'diyavid b'soymech on the sheet that it says one third cooked suffices. Now, one third or one half, we also have to define. It takes 2 hours to cook something. So what's half the cooking done? We would say in the mathematical model, 1 hour. But the Chazon Ish Zatzal says it's not true. Why?
Start slower.
Right, because first you got to, let's say you're cooking. So first you got to get the water hot. Once the water is boiling, then the cooking is going to start. Then, so the part that chelik at his man that is just going to, it's warming up, is not really a really proactive part of the mission. So it's not always so easy to calculate, you know, what that man is going to be. You know, it's longer than we tend to imagine. Now, in Shabbos, I said, since we're only dealing with Elisa de Rabbanon, so we are soimach on the fact that b'diyevet that one third cooked is meichel ben Rusoy. In the halachas of Erev Tavshilin, it also appears that the food has to be edible on Erev Shabbos. And there the Prima Godim writes in Reish Nun Tes that it should be half cooked, not a third cooked. And the cheshbon is because here we're dealing with a chashash deraisa of cooking miyontif for another day, which is an Issa D'Raisa. An Issa D'Raisa, so we have to be machmer. Now, for some peculiar reason, which I don't know what it is, it's a mystery which is an imponderable. The Chofetz Chaim and Siman Tovkov Chav Zayin and Erev Tavshilin, he quotes the view of a third cooked, and he sources it as the Prima Godim. Now, the Prima Godim did not write that. The Prima Godim wrote in Hilchos Shabbos that in terms of Erev Tavshilin, he had a half and not a third. There is a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that said you need a third. But the truth of the matter is it's a difficult psak to understand, because there is one other way to get around this problem, and to assume that the halacha is like a different shita. But if you assume that the halacha is like a different shita, then you wouldn't even have to worry to have it one third cooked. And the other sheet is not a sheet that we do, is a minority view, a decidedly minority view on the halacha. So the Prima Godim's psak that it has to be half cooked stands very well, because there we're dealing not with an isa de rabbanon of shehiyah, but we're dealing with an isa de rice of cooking miyantif lechaver. We'll hold it at this point, Rabbi Yisai. So next week we'll take up the other half of why we have the halacha.